Betty Alpern and Linda Hurwitz interviewing Benjamin Green on November 7th, 1977. November.
Yeah. Right, sure. This is your mic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, it's right here as you're talking. I don't think it's okay, Mr. Green, why don't we start off with my asking you to tell us a little bit about your background as a Pittsburgher, when your family came to Pittsburgh, and then when you were born, and a little bit about your childhood.
I was the first child born to Morris Green and Ida Klavansky from Altoona, December the 25th, 1910. Morris Green had come to this country just before the Spanish-American War, was met at Ellis Island by his brother-in-law, Joe Greenwald, and that is how we got the name Green, our European name I'm not even familiar with, but at Ellis Island at that period, they just applied names to people. And Ida Klavansky, my mother, lived in Altoona. They had come over, also from Vilna, from little towns. My father's town was Esmer. My mother was raised on a dairy farm, which also served as an inn for transient Jews for over a Shabbos and stuff like that. My grandfather, Klavansky, came here first, left 8 children in Europe, came to Altoona, where he had relatives, and of course brought the family over. The stories of the steerage that my grandmother and grandfather told me are typical of what we know from other histories of the people that came in that time. The problem, a lot of Jewish girls in small towns, like Altoona was considered a small town then, had to meet Jewish boys. And they were also distributed in small towns or in cities, and they met casually through some mutual friends, as did her younger sister, Dora Young. You might know her even. Ruth Young's mother. My mother and her were sisters. And they was seeing Louis Young from Pittsburgh, or McKee's Rocks at the time. And somehow my mother met my father, who, like all the other ones, was working for his brother-in-law at the time on Water Street. Joe Greenwald was quite a prominent man here, but he had Michigasson in him. He is, incidentally, Jerry Greenwald from Wayne and Weil, his grandfather. Oh. So, anyways, my father worked for them because his sister was married to Joe. And then they peddled like they all did because of their knowledge of the Lithuanian Polish. And he went to night school. Then he met my mother. She came here. It's a very interesting fact that one of the men who owns Lightning Express now, even to this day, remember, he said, "Oh, I remember when Mr. Green brought Ida Klavansky here. There wasn't enough room in my horse-drawn van or wagon for all the hat boxes she brought." The women those years wore fancy big plumed hats, and they were all kept in boxes. And if you know Dora, you knew my mother, all these sisters, Mrs. Charlson, Annie, their other sister, and Gussie, the Perth Amboy, who died. They're all dead. Dora's the only surviving one. They were all clothes horses, and they all were fancy ladies. And you're still red and good.
Perfect. Continue, please.
But
they moved at that time. How elegant they were, and how.
Well, mother was a very beautiful girl. You'll notice that from pictures I'll show you, and from those of her family that you might know. All the Klavansky women were beautiful. say this without prejudice, without the and stately,
unbiased.
A stately type of women, mm-hmm. And Dad then bought his own business. He bought out his the store on Water Street, and they lived at that time on Tunnel Street. They were married on Thanksgiving of 1909, and I was born on Reed Street in old Mr. Kaufman's house.
Which Kaufman?
You know, Dr. Kaufman, not the surgeon, and Carl Kaufman, the podiatrist, their grandfather. Carl and I are still, to this day, very good friends, and we're in touch. And I was born at Christmas of 1910. And they continued as other merchants did. From there they moved to Wiley and Kirkpatrick, where my sister Stella was born. An interesting thing is that Dr. Eber, who was a cousin of my mother's, he made the delivery of both of us, along with midwives. I don't remember, there were two of them. There was a Bubba Khanna, and there was another one. This Bubba Khanna, Ida wrote up a whole lot about.
Right.
But there was another one. I don't know which one. There were two that were very prominent in the Hill District. Mm-hmm. And you had the midwife, and of course, having a cousin, a doctor, who also, it's an interesting slant of Pittsburgh-esque, he later married one of the Oppenheimers from the Reformed Jews, from the Deutsche Juden, and he went to Leipzig, to Germany, to study ophthalmology. And he became an outstanding ophthalmologist here in Pittsburgh. Harvey Thorpe was one of his residents, or intern, whatever they call them, I think. And she was born there. At that time, we had an unfortunate incident happen in Pittsburgh. They had gas lights. The mining companies and steel companies were importing a lot of Pollocks and different places from Europe, and our business was directly across the street from the B&O Depot, 423 Water Street, and these would come by depot there, and the people would keep them overnight. There was a hotel upstairs from us, and incidentally, as a child, I remember when President Taft came, and my dad was so proud when he came home that President Taft stood at Monongahela House, which was a block away from our place, and he shook hands with the merchants and all of that. An interesting slant on that particular location is also that, like Henry Ford, when he was looking for capital, stopped at the B&O and went from store to store to get the...
Very
desirable spot. And most of the rent receipts from that end of Water Street up to Smithfield Street were all signed by Judge Mellon, who originally started the Mellon Bank. I told you they bring these foreigners in that way. Now, these men went to bed, and they had the gas mantles those years. And they didn't know from nothing, from Europe, what they used, candles or oil lamps, so they blew them out. During the night, one had to go to a bathroom and struck a match, blew up the whole place. No sign of them, and of course, my dad's store got destroyed completely. So,
what year was this when your dad's store was destroyed?
Well, this would be when Stella was born. That would be about 1912, 1913, somewhere in those years. I remember by incident more than by years. I was only a baby, 18 months old. The quaint things of this to remember is that they just went stone broke. My dad was very honest. You have to pay off bills. And he did, and he made a comeback. But what I remember is the making of diapers for Stella and the little vest. They made all that themselves those years. And Mr. Rabick had the store on Center Avenue, the dry goods store. And I remember flannel was something like less than a quarter a yard to make so many diapers, and how they had to watch that they wouldn't have the proper layout for this baby because of what happened to father. the women that they worked very close with their husbands. I mean,
in the business and
Well, my dad didn't like ladies in business. He wanted them at home. He treated them the way our Chumash says, like the Malka of the house, the queen of the house. That was her part. They're not supposed to want, and you're supposed to work and accept. It's still a good theory, really.
How did your mother feel about this?
Well, it's hard to tell. I was a youngster, but I know they went through, because these things are repeated later, you know. It was a trial period, a very trial period, because my father put the strings on them till the creditors were paid off and all. And surprisingly enough, when I had to go in business and my father was dead over 25, 30 years, on his reputation alone, the fact that he was honest helped me. Let me put it that way. How sometimes a good reputation lives. Well, we wound up with, there were seven of us. Following her birth was Ruth. She's Ruth Spokane now. That's her husband's the vice president there at Charitera. And Ruth's birth had some very funny... Now, all of these births are at home.
I see it because of the midwife and the doctor. I don't think that many people went to hospital then.
Our hospital came with my brother Bobby Alvashalom, the baby. No, with the twins. Now, this is interesting slants, too. Well, Ruth was one of those born with a veil, what they called. The afterbirth came with her. And here was the women there, my Aunt Minnie, who was very close to us. She was my father's only sister, and she lived with my mother and father and helped raise us all the time. They were close. A very pious woman. And the doctor came in. They were just standing by, even the midwife was unaware. And that was my cousin, Dr. Ebriot. And he pulled the veil off, called them foolish women, the baby suffocating to death. The strange thing is, my mother preserved that. Ballot was in a drawer of her dresser, I don't know for how many years, till that membrane just dried and soon you touched it, it crumbled into pieces. But she had that to brag about. They didn't have much to talk about. The women there was our families, our children, and you didn't have the television, the movies. You had the Yiddish theater once in a while, and my father was fond of music, so at the old exposition hall, I remember as a child myself, was I 5, 6 years? I heard Sousa's band. Sousa himself conducted. At that time, he had the long hair. When he came back from work, he had the short hair. His hair would flow when he conducted this martial music. And these are pictures that are in my mind. Remember Enrico Caruso singing at the same place? Remember him in Pagliaccia? I can only visualize him with the clown collar and all, and that little bit of a man. He wasn't a big man. That dynamic voice reaching out. Now, those are the backgrounds that... Well, this gives you an idea of the cultural background that was available to people at that time outside of the Yiddish theater, which at that time we didn't have an actual Yiddish theater in Pittsburgh, but we had a repertoire that would come. Tomaszewski, and later on Schwartz. I saw Molly Picon when I was a young man. She played Yiddel on her fiddle. And that was already at the Lando Theater that we had at Corner Center and Green Street before they built the other theater. This way, all repertoire companies would come. The Yiddish, we had also the Arbiter Ring, had a hall and an auditorium in on Robert Street. And that was available to us as teenagers, too, as we grew up. We could use that for our little dramatic problems, and then there were meetings. Socialism, as you know, was a very big deal with us.
Yeah, I want to get into that in a little while. Let me just ask you right here, did you have a special strong interest in the music or the drama or growing up, like, was there a special area that especially there was, to you?
Our specialty at that time is growing up was education. Mm-hmm. My father, Rabbi Shalom, is the one thing that he loved with America. That's what his love. We went to night school. My mother came over quite young, so she went to school during the day in Altoona. But my dad, this education was a wonderful thing, to be able to send his children to a school, a free school, and learn. And I guess that became a phobia. Reading, which as a result of that, reading became a hobby. A certain amount of sports. We played sports a lot, mostly like Manny's, you know what they call them, shooting marbles, and hide and seek, cat and dog we used to play, a little bit of baseball. My dad was not reluctant he was a baseball fiend and a boxing fiend at that time. I remember how enthused he was with the George Carpenter fight when Dempsey beat him. those recollections come to me. We had a full childhood. Not rich, not wealthy, but complete. Complete.
A letter off than it sounds like, yeah, some of the people.
Complete morally and complete and the culturally.
The family supporting each other. Different.
Oh, yes, we all went together. I mean, you had nobody else.
But Santa, so your recollection of Santa, so you felt it was a happy childhood for you?
I would say yes, compared to what you hear. I would say a happy childhood. We were happy in comparison when we heard of the child. Don't forget our parents, and with parents, my father brought over a nephew. Everybody started bringing somebody else over. Mm-hmm. And in my childhood, we had first-hand observation looking through the windows at the ladies and men making Tobies. They got into that because they wouldn't work on Shabbos. And that was controlled by Jews mostly at that time, the cigar factories.
Right, Tobies or Tobies.
We called them Tobies. Yeah, they were Stogies.
Right.
Pittsburgh was known for the Stogie. The Marsh Wheely.
Everybody.
One of the favorite places was across the street from where McKelvey School is now. At a reservoir next to that, across the street, was a big building, sort of a warehouse building. In the bottom there, they made Tobies. There were several places. But we would get a good observation looking in that way. Mm-hmm. There was...
Did your father involve? I mean, it sounds the recollections that you have. Did they come later, or at the time your parents were going through hardships or family decisions? Were children
always
involved in decisions?
No, children weren't really involved in decisions. Mm-hmm. We were little. We were 18 months apart, and there were seven of us.
Right, so pretty busy.
So,
children,
first place, there was just my mother and my Aunt Minnie to raise us. There were three meals a day had to be cooked. There was washing to be done. The washing was done on a scrub board. And then another thing my mother believed in, I gave my daughter the pictures, I may have one. I refused to go to school, for instance, because I wore long hair, long curls, coming way down my head. She'd get up early in the morning to see that when the four of us were already of school age, to comb that hair, and we had to go immaculate. The green kids were known for... That was... My mother was that way. I have a sister that way.
Was this while you were living on Robert Street?
No, this was on Wiley. Worcester and Wiley. That's from Kirkpatrick. We never lived on Robert Street.
Oh.
Robert Street, I referred to you, was where the Arbiter Ring was. The auditorium.
And Reed Street. And
then that's right. And...
Where did you go to school?
I started school... First grade, McKelvey School. Mr. Kennedy was principal. I did not like school because I was spoiled by my rabbi. My father had a private tutor. He said Hebrew comes first because these kids will learn all the English and everything they need to. That's compulsory. What they don't pick up on the street, they're going to get in school. What they don't get in school, they'll pick up on the street. So Yiddish was spoken in a home. So we all acquired Yiddish. Hebrew I was tutored. Old Rabbi Sachs with the red beard who tutored me and the derby. Now, he was a very fatherly, very competent man who seemed to understand children, but he spoiled me. He treated me nice. Said I had a good head as I studied. When I went to school, I expected the same attention. I wasn't used to the classroom. And they had an awful time with me in first grade. I refused to go. My dad had to come there and correct me, and he never would correct me physically. He did not believe in physical correction of children. And I don't either. I never did. Maybe I should have. But that's the way school was. There was four of us wound up going to Kelby School. And that's where my dad died while he was in the process of buying a house. He died on Rosh Hashanah, the first day. There were seven of us and my brother Bob Albishol, and that's that boy up there in his suit. Handsome boy. He was 4 weeks old when Dad died. And
your father left?
Yeah.
All young.
So we then had a... We bought a house on Dinwiddie Street, one of those big stone houses, so we could have it for income, because a widow got no help at those years. So we could have it for income, a place to live. And eventually we wound up in Alton High School, in Fifth Avenue High School, so we were close to it.
How old were you when your father passed away?
I was 10. He died Rosh Hashanah. I would have been 11 on that Christmas. An interesting slant on the births that went up to Ruth. After Ruth, I had twin sisters born, Doris and Florence. Now, they were the first ones born in a private maternity hospital that was run by the Wexlers, Dr. Wexlers. The two brothers had a maternity hospital for a while.
Yes, that's before, where Samson is.
That's right. Before they built the big Montefiore.
But there was a Montefiore on the hill. Though.
There was a Montefiore, and I remember it well because of the flu epidemic after the war. The whole family had flu excepting me and my father and Aunt Minnie, and then my grandmother came from Lancaster to help us. Either help, we were children. And I remember us having to wear these little bags. Everybody, when we went to school, we had little flannel bags, either with camphor in it. The more foul-smelling it was, you know, you pull it out, and mine smells more foul than yours. That was the protection. The doctors and the undertakers just used whiskey to protect them, always. Were loaded. It was a bad epidemic. I remember it very vividly. When my mother, that was after the twins were born, when she went to Montefiore Hospital, you couldn't go in to see her. My dad, after work, would go by streetcar. Montefiore there was at Center and Heron, up on a hill where Trees Field is today, Pitt. You'd have to stand on a box to look in the window for her. The hospital was full.
Even I only saw the outside of it.
Well,
it was heart-shaped.
Oh, yeah, it was right on top of that hill. It was a Jewish hospital. The only other hospitals that I can recall at that time on a hill was Passvant, which is, it's not there any longer, I don't think. That was on Robert and Reed. And I think Mercy Hospital. That is, I'm talking about the Hill area. I can't remember any other hospitals.
There was another child after the twins.
Yeah, then after the twins, my baby brother was born. He was born also in a hospital. He was the unwanted one, and he wound up to be the most loved one. Dr. Oshinsky, who was very friendly to the family, said, well, you go and have him. Then he had to go, I don't recall if this one, Nathan Oshinsky had to go off to war or not, but anyways, Dave Steinman delivered Bobby. I don't think he was a full-fledged doctor yet, and that's where he met his wife. He married her. She was a nurse at the old Montefiore. I'm trying to think of her name. Her sister Sarah's a nurse here, and she was married. Who was that pianist? Levant. Well, Sarah Levant's sister was married to Dave Steinman. They met in a hospital when Bobby was born. This was his first delivery, because all the other qualified physicians had gone to war. World War I, I'm talking about.
Now, who supported the family when your father died and all these young children?
Well, that's, the father left some money, insurance. He left the business.
But that was unusual.
And the business was wrong. Well, yeah, well, my dad was, he was up to date. He had that beautiful European background, but he had a lot of reason to despise it for certain things that did happen to him that I can recount to you. But he was very modern. The books he brought home, even books on sports, he would bring me stuff like that. I remember going down to the old exposition hall. That used to be where the point is. And that really was the center of the big culture in Pittsburgh at that time. Your bands, your operas, everything came there. And then they exhibited that first airplane, not the Wright brothers one, but he flew a little bit. The fellow was from Pittsburgh. I don't remember his name. Agoy. I think they still have it somewhere in a museum. Anyways, they were showing that, and my dad says, you're going to see it where people are going to fly. But if he'd ever thought of radio and television, my God, he wouldn't believe it. But flying, he started believing. Oh, yeah, and he also at that time used to talk a great deal, because where we were located in business, a lot of the politicians would come there, you know, because we also sold guns to the police force. We had a gents furnishing.
Kind of business your father was in?
He was in gents furnishing, and he had the contract to sell guns to the policemen and all that, so... He was politically minded, not in politics, but, and he was one of the very early advocates of a subway system for Pittsburgh and stuff like that. I mean, he was active. He was all family. During business hours, his associates were these kind of people. The hill politicians weren't many. There was just, all that I can recall in the Jewish politicians on the hill was a Harry Feldman, who was an alderman. Well, I was Summers Summerman, too, but he came after Harry. There was Summerman became an alderman. Harry was the ward healer for the Fifth Ward. I'm talking of the Jewish element.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. At what point, it sounds as though probably you enjoyed this special position of being the only son for so long.
I wasn't the only son for very long. I was the only son for... Stella was born next. Oh, my brother Albert, I forgot to tell you about him. He's always shown, too. He was born after Ruth, before the twins.
I see.
He was also born at home. It happened, I actually almost witnessed his birth. I was in the other room. The whole family would gather, you know, in the other room. Already I was a little older. Albert was delivered by a Dr. Vaux, V-A-U-X, who lived on Center Avenue. He was a Gentile. And that's also because my cousin was studying in studying ophthalmology in Leipzig, Dr. Eber. And Nathan Oshinsky was away at war. And I remember this big fat man delivering it. Albert was a big, that's the first time I saw him wash a newborn baby. He was a big baby, big, slimy little thing at the time. And... All children, but the twins, and so the twins, he came before the twins, there were four of us, then came the twins, then Bobby.
You said that you had trouble, your parents had trouble with you in first grade. How did it go after first grade?
I became such a lover of school that you couldn't keep me out of it. I used to regret when Ayuntiv came that we had to stay out. I loved school very much, public school, and of course in high school I made it in 3 years.
Really?
I liked it so well.
Where did you go after McKelvey School?
McKelvey School, I had to go to Moorhead School. We had bought a house in Dinwiddie Street, and we couldn't get into it, and we had to get out of the house where we were living. So we rented temporary quarters on Enoch Street, which was near Moorhead School, and I was forced to transfer to Moorhead School. I finished public school, grade school there. And then we went on to high school.
Okay.
Then already we had our own. We had gained possession of the house we bought on Dinwiddie Street. Then we went to Fifth Avenue High School. All seven of us matriculated from Fifth Avenue High School. There were seven of us.
Did you have the opportunity to go into school and beyond that?
No, I couldn't. I took courses and stuff, but there was a family to support already. You had to realize your responsibilities. That's one thing we always did, realize our responsibilities. I had a scholarship to go, but couldn't take advantage of.
So what kind of work did you start to do when you finished high school?
I finished high school. I did everything I could. On Grand Street, I used to walk down and wash windows for merchants, watch our store. Saturday nights, I'd sell Sunday morning papers till the wee hours in the morning. In the summer, I would run around to picnics and different places, and we would sell things and track meets. I always was my own boss in all of these endeavors. Track meets, pop, and stuff like that. When Pitt Stadium opened,